Hello, everyone, and thanks for coming back to WorldForge. WorldForge is a podcast by creators and for creators, where we use random prompts to invent just about anything you can imagine. Together, we'll make heroes and villains, ancient monsters and magical cities, and our hope is that we can inspire all the other creators and storytellers out there listening to do the same. So without any further ado, I'm Piper.
And I'm Sam.
And welcome to WorldForge. Hello, everyone. Happy December. Welcome back to WorldForge.
Yeah. Well, I guess actually happy like December's Eve.
It's probably
the 30th, I think, of November when this episode's coming out.
But yes. Well, happy almost December.
Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The anticipation makes it sweeter, right?
Right. April Fools.
Yes. Yes. But in spite of it not quite being December yet, actually, we have still saw fit to engage in some Christmas holiday activities here.
Exactly. We were just talking about the fact that holidays like Christmas and Halloween are essentially now month-long events.
Yeah.
Because, and what I was saying is that I think the whole season is kind of wrapped around these things, and they kind of are the epitome of these seasons. When you think of fall and autumn, you think of Halloween, and when you think of winter, you think of Christmas or other Yuletime holidays.
Yeah.
So I see why it's easy to embrace.
Depending on who you ask, some people think Christmas lasts for like 4 months, which
right.
I think is a little much. Like, I love Christmas, but that's a lot. But nonetheless, here we are starting our kind of Christmassy, wintery themed episodes a little bit early this week. But I'm excited for it. I have been looking forward to doing more. We did all of our fun Halloween stuff.
Exactly.
And I thought that was a blast. I liked having kind of a theme throughout the month, and I was really looking forward to doing that again for Christmas. So here we are doing that, inspired by some fun stuff we did today, Piper.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about? What we went and did? Do we want to share?
Oh, I sure can. This morning, we got up and we went out to meet my parents, for one of our family traditions, which is going out to cut down a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've always been a family that goes and we go to a Christmas tree farm. We're not a buy it from a lot family. We're never a fake tree family.
No.
That's
disgraceful.
Don't even mention that. But so we went out and did that today, and it was really nice because, like, growing up, that's been one of the most sort of happy holiday iconic things that we do. And there's so much tradition for me personally, having grown up and done that, kind of steeped around it. It's like, Sam wasn't crazy about the long drive, but like, it's about the experience and the journey.
Yeah.
You know, you bundle up, you get your hot drink, you go out and you drive into the country for an hour or so, and you listen to Christmas music, and then you find a tree and you cut it down and you bring it home and all that fun stuff. So we did that today.
Yeah. Well, and in fairness, the only reason I wasn't into the drive is because we knew we had a podcast to record and holiday decorations set up. We had a very busy day today, and
like,
we spent 2 hours in a car doing nothing when we could be at home doing all this stuff. But I was a little bit of a Scrooge.
Get it. No, it's okay.
I've moved on.
We're all Grinches sometimes.
I had a lot of fun, and I also really I appreciate the traditions. And I think, you know, for any of our listeners who don't celebrate Christmas, I think this is something that is easy to translate, you know, across all different kind of, you know, holidays and sort of backgrounds. If you are, you know, looking for some kind of inspiration, look to the traditions that you have around certain times of the year, because sometimes those can be interesting things to kind of spin into an adventure or an experience in game. So that's a little bit, I think, of what we're going to be touching on this week. And I think that's going to be really fun to see how we can take some of those things.
Absolutely.
But we're actually going to get a little more specific to it than that with our inspirations this week. Piper, do you want to talk about what our cool idea is, I think, for creating characters this week?
Well, sure. So this was your idea, actually. So
but
I'll share your idea for you if you like. We have in front of us in our podcasting studio right now, laid out on the table, are all of our Christmas decorations, all of our ornaments for the tree.
Our Christmas tree, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Sam's idea was is that we would
randomly pick some of our ornaments and use them to inspire characters or story creations for, you know, one of our roleplay settings.
Absolutely. So Piper's going to pick some for me and I'm going to pick some for her. And what we thought would be really interesting kind of as an additional little challenge is that as you are creating, I'm going to be grabbing more of these and saying, okay, now you have to incorporate this one.
Right.
So we'll put up a picture on Twitter of all of the ornaments that are kind of available to us laid out in front of us. But we've got a little bit of a house style here.
Yes.
we were kind of joking, like, my Christmas tree ornament aesthetic is white and gold and animals. I kind of want my Christmas tree to just look like a zoo all the time. So,
it's a lot of woodland creatures.
Yeah. There's a lot of like little deer and bison and squirrels and foxes and things like that. So,
most of them are very fuzzy and a lot of them are like made of sticks and twine.
Yeah.
So very retro and rustic, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But I think this will be a really, really fun one. I like getting to incorporate physical things into these episodes. So yeah, we'll make sure to, like I said, we'll include pictures of that and include pictures of the specific ornaments that we used.
Definitely.
But yeah.
Sam, before we go into doing that though, do you want to share one of your favorite holiday traditions?
Yeah, actually. So I also really do like going to cut down a tree. For me, I also am a big real tree person. I've always thought the idea of fake trees is kind of like, I don't know, sort of sad to me. And that's not, you know, dunking on anybody who likes a fake tree. Like, there are legitimate reasons. It's a lot of work to set up a tree and to, you know, clean up after it and water it and, you know, get rid of all the needles and stuff when you're done. Like, I think that's totally fair.
I can also understand. Yeah. I've heard a lot of people say, well, a tree caught fire once in my house, so now I'm fake all the time. And that's totally understandable.
Absolutely. But one of my favorite traditions actually was not necessarily going to go cut down a tree. It was, before Piper and I moved in together, spoilers, we live together.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's why we still continue to record in the same space through a pandemic. But my previous roommate and I, my very best friend, Zach, he and I, we lived together for about 4 or 5 years. And we just, you know, had a little tiny apartment tree. And we didn't really care where we got it. We were just kind of like, oh, I want to get a live tree somewhere nearby. And we live in you know, South Minneapolis. And we found this place literally underneath an overpass, like underneath a highway overpass, that was this tiny, tiny little tree farm. And we always thought it was so funny that we would, you know, we would joke about like going under the bridge, like making shady deals to get a Christmas tree. And every year we'd grab a tree and we'd get a picture of me pulling a bunch of cash out of my pocket, like it's some kind of illicit deal or something. So that was always a really fun memory for me. And we've done that, a couple times since we've lived. I think we went last year and we got a tree there under the bridge. But that's always just been a funny thing that it's not really Christmassy at all. It's like a, you know, a bus stop under under an overpass.
Well, it's funny. You always describe it that way, but it is actually part of where they have the farmer's market in the summertime.
Yeah, yeah.
But no farmer's market is there in the winter, so it looks pretty empty and barren.
Yeah.
One thing I think is actually kind of a cool visual aesthetic about that location is that they have a lot of the trees are like suspended from the ceiling.
Yeah,
and they're just hanging there. And if you walk through the rows of suspended trees, it almost makes me think, I'm like, someone should film like a music video here. There should be a scene in like a thriller where someone's running between the suspended trees and there's a person with a gun, and it's just weird.
You know what it makes me think of is like a butcher shop.
I was going to say, like, a slaughterhouse.
Yeah, exactly.
Which it is if you view trees that way.
For sure. So yeah, that's a really kind of a favorite tradition of mine. Also, obviously, there's, you know, holiday movies and stuff that are important.
Oh,
I'm
yes.
a big diehard Christmas person. I 100% think Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and that is a hill that I will die on. And it's a necessary part of the holiday season for me. The Die Hard and The Muppet Christmas Carol, I think, are the two like essential Christmas movies for me.
Yeah.
So
for us, it was always obviously White Christmas is a necessity.
Oh, for sure.
This
was not an exclusionary list.
Oh,
for
no,
me.
No, 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 no. But that was the one that we always did. There are a few movies actually that I'm thinking of now that aren't necessarily Christmas films, but we typically watch it around that time. Like I'm automatically thinking of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, which is just because it's so wintry. That is something we always usually throw on around this time of year.
Perennial recommendation of yours on this podcast. I think you've brought that up a handful of times, recommending it to listeners, which I love it. I like it.
It makes me happy.
Yeah. That should go on the bingo board.
It should. Yes. I talk about Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Yeah.
But one of our other Christmas classics classics, which we almost always put on while my parents and I were decorating the tree, is Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
And we referenced that like 1,000 times today when we were out getting our tree, you know, talking about, oh, what if there's, you know, a squirrel in here and all that jazz.
But for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, there's so many kind of tropes and, you know, like inside jokes and things like that that get wrapped up in our holiday traditions. And I think that's why they're such a rich mm-hmm. source of inspiration for things like this, because yeah. you get all of this kind of baggage that's attached to them. And whether that is sort of universally accepted baggage or if it is baggage that's just kind of carried between you and your family or you and your friends, I think those really, really specific details of these traditions can be really, really fun to explore and to find ways to infuse them into your games. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. I also wanted to just talk about quick here. We thought it would maybe be fun to say what our favorite holiday episode of like some, you know, a show or a, you know, something like that is. Do you have one specifically that you think is a really, really good example of taking an existing non-holiday themed property and infusing some of these kind of Christmas traditions into it in just the way that we're going to be doing in this episode?
I do. So not long ago, I talked about on the show that I had binged the TV adaptation of the movie The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, which I really liked.
Every listener is like, I don't know what that is.
So there was a novel called The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. They made it into a movie with Rex Harrelson, and then they made it into a TV show in the 60s, and it got 2 seasons, and it's just like really cute and happy family stuff. But it's about this widow and her 2 young kids who move into this small cottage. She's a writer, and she wants to be someplace where she can have a lot of seclusion so she can work on her craft. And there happens to be the ghost of an old sea captain living there. And instead of, you know, scaring her away, he decides, yeah, you can stay. And it's about kind of like the romance that blossoms between them. And in the show, it's much more a lot of like, oh, look at these wacky ghost shenanigans and like the way, because, you know, episode to episode.
Yeah.
But they have a really cute Christmas episode, because the whole thing about their romance is they have so many tender moments, you know, where they gaze at one another and they make these promises to each other. And it's like, oh, if only, you know, I was alive, or you were born in my time, and all these other things. But there is a Christmas episode where I think it's supposed to be like Christmas magic. He's able to kind of give the family this kind of shared dream. So when they all go to sleep, it's like they're back in kind of his era, which is like about 100 years ago.
Interesting.
And so like they're wearing kind of these old timey dresses. It's very like a Christmas carol kind of setting. And in this dream, he's able to like actually be with them, and it ends with him and her sharing a kiss, and they wake up, you know, and then they're like, oh wow, I had this strange dream, and everyone had the same dream. And she's like, wow, like I actually got to kiss you, that was awesome. And it's like, for me, I'm like, oh my god, they finally kissed, it's so nice. And it's just very, very cute.
Piper definitely has a thing for spirits and ghosts.
Oh hell yeah. I love ghost romances. I think I made a tweet not long ago, I'm like, I need more stories where people fall in love with ghosts.
Yeah, I sometimes am worried a little bit about that I haven't quite reached my final form.
Oh,
and
my
that
gosh.
You're going to maybe expedite the journey to that location. But
don't worry,
metaphysically
you're safe.
Speaking, but okay, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I promise not to kill you, just so I can have a ghost boyfriend. Perfect. There's a lot of negative things that come with that.
Certainly. Ectoplasm everywhere.
Oh, gross.
I think that's a cool recommendation, and I love how ghosts are often tied into the Christmas lore, which is very strange to me, I think. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there's some kind of old folklore kind of connection there, right? But I just like the idea that it's your memories kind of live on, there's these like cautionary tales that are told to you by spirits of the holiday season.
Well, I think there is something about that time of year where it's kind of mystical and magical.
Anything can happen.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Like all the Christmas movies are like, ooh, Christmas magic and things like that. But then also I feel like it almost shares something sort of akin to like on All Hallows Eve, spirits can come back. And it's like, well, on Christmas Eve, like also this kind of doorway opens.
Yeah. On Halloween, the spirits come back to kill you. On Christmas, the spirits come back to bang you or something. Like, whatever it is that happens in that.
Oh my gosh. But no, so what I was leaning more towards is there's that one song, I think it's The Most Wonderful Time of the Year, where they have that line where they're like, scary ghost. No, what? Tales of the Glories and Scary Ghost Stories of Long Time, of Christmases Long, Long Ago.
Yeah.
And I remember listening to that and thinking about it. I'm like, wait, who tells ghost stories at Christmas time? But then I was like, they must be referencing A Christmas Carol, which is all about ghosts.
Oh, maybe. I was thinking that was like a Civil War thing or something, probably. When they're like, oh, it's Christmas time and it's been 17 years since we've seen Grandpappy after he left for the Civil War. You know, like he has to walk home from Antietam. It'll take him 8 years. Like that's kind of what I pictured.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that'd just be something that'd be interesting to research, is to be like, is like telling ghost stories common around Christmas time apart from like A Christmas Carol? Like, was he one of the first people ever who's like, I'm going to tell a Christmas story about ghosts, or was that already kind of a thing?
We should probably do an episode about this, actually. Make a Christmas ghost story.
Christmas ghost story,
yeah,
yes.
Christmas ghosts.
Nice. Stay tuned, guys.
Yes, I'm making a note of
awesome.
That
I like this
right
idea. Sam, what is one of your favorite adaptations for Christmas time?
I actually really, really like the Justice League animated series Christmas episode where...
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, where Clark Kent invites Martian Manhunter
Yay!
Back to Smallville
yes,
with him for Christmas.
Yes, that's so good.
It's adorable. I mean, Justice League animated is just a phenomenal show in general, but I really, really like that one because it's sort of just a total break from everything else that's going on in the show. And it, like... a show that most kind of story arcs are like 2 or 3 episode long things. It's mm-hmm. typically these kind of bigger ideas and stories that are told in that show. And then they just have this one random Christmas episode where it's just everybody having a fun time on Christmas. And Martian Manhunter is like, well, I'm from a different planet and I don't really have family here. I don't really know what to do. And Clark says, well, you're coming with me. That's what you're going to do.
Cute.
And Ma Kent makes him a sweater. And she, there's a really funny part. Yeah, that's her name. Martha Kent.
Ma and Pa Kent.
Ma and Pa Kent, yeah. where Martha Kent knits him a sweater and she's like, well, you know, we use Superman's proportions because we weren't really sure what size you were. And he goes, it'll be fine. And he just grows to Superman's size so the sweater fits.
Imagine knitting a sweater that large. That's like making a sweater for The Rock.
Or knitting a sweater for an alien. Two both very strange experiences.
Pretty cool.
I think so.
No, that's always been so sweet.
I think that's a fun one. And I really like the, you know, sometimes kind of Christmas break or holiday break episodes can be really cheesy and a way to be like, you know, whatever. I kind of want to get to the story, but I really like that one. And I think it's fun.
Yeah. You know what that makes me think of? Another really fun one is from Batman, the animated series, the one where Harley and Ivy go like shopping.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
But they're not shopping. They hypnotize Bruce, Wayne, Bruce and they use his credit cards to go on a shopping spree.
I'm pretty sure what happens is that Ivy kisses Bruce with like a mind control lipstick on or something like that.
Yeah.
So they make him, you know, take them out shopping on Christmas Eve. And it's so funny.
They run
up his credit cards and
I remember there being a specific scene where you see him like carrying boxes and like he's mentally aware of what's happening, but he can't stop. And he's got this grimace on his
so
face
angry.
And he's like, oh, like so mad that they're just like buying all this stuff.
But honestly, there are so many worse things they could be doing, right?
Right.
Like that's actually kind of an adorable, wholesome thing. All they wanted was just to look nice. They just wanted like some fun new clothes or whatever.
Exactly. And also they did it to a billionaire. They didn't do it to an average Joe Schmo who they're like stealing his life savings.
Yeah.
Like Bruce has enough money that he can take the girls on a shopping spree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's probably better than him, you know, spending the night beating them up for crimes or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, he's still keeping them out of trouble, but just in a slightly different way, right? I like that a lot. That would also be, I think, a really fun, I mean, we have kind of fashion montages in D&D fairly often. I think it's fun to do costume changes and things, but you know, to look at your characters and say, what are some gifts that they would buy for the other members of their party? Like what would be a Christmas shopping trip for this character? That would be kind of a fun thing to do. If you want to just kind of, you know, without spending any money, show some appreciation for your fellow players, your DM.
Cute.
Get them something nice in game, you know?
Aww.
I mean, maybe that's kind of cheesy and silly, but I would really, I don't know, I'd be really touched by that, actually.
Yeah.
I think that would be really cute.
I think it would be a nice creative exercise to say, let's invent, not for us, but like for anyone listening who wants to do sort of like a Christmas or holiday themed like session, is to say, well, Christmas probably doesn't exist in this fantasy world because Christianity isn't really a thing. So like make up a new Yuletide holiday.
Yeah.
Like come brainstorm what it is, what the traditions are around it, what the lore is behind it, you know, how you practice it, how long it lasts, what meals would you eat during this time? What activities would you do?
I love that.
I think that'd be cool.
I'm writing that down too. This is secretly just the episode where we brainstorm all the topics we're going to talk about for the rest of December.
Awesome.
I think that would be really fun coming up with a festive holiday for the fantasy world. I'm sure there is in canon stuff that, you know, in Ravnica they celebrate, you know, magical, I don't know. I'm sure there are things in lore where they do that, but I don't know about them. So if you know about any in lore, you know, first party Wizards of the Coast Christmas-like holidays.
I was gonna say Festivus is probably D&D, right?
yeah, they totally celebrate Festivus in D&D. No, reach out to us and let us know if you can think of any, or if you've ever done something like this, if you've done an in-game kind of Christmas party or holiday party or something like that. We'd love to hear about that. Reach out to us at WorldForgePod on Twitter and share that. That would be really cool.
Because I think it'd be really interesting to think about, if you have a race like an elf or a dwarf who lives a really long time, do you think they care as much about celebrating annual holidays because they experience so many years? Do they not view time the same? And they're like, instead of once a year we celebrate this, maybe it's like once every 10 years.
Once every century or something.
Yeah, then we do this holiday.
I wonder. I mean, I feel like you could make an argument either way. You know, on kind of an individual level, of course, individuals have their own preferences. Like maybe some of them are like, oh, what a pain that we have to do this every single year, you know, because a year is like the blink of an eye to somebody who lives for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
But others might say, well, we do this so many times. It's really important. This tradition mm-hmm. matters a lot. There's a reason that we do this every single year. There's a reason that we do this 4,000 times in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that would be an interesting kind of discussion. And I could see that being an easy avenue into a sort of like Grinch versus holiday cheer. You know, if you have an elf who says, oh, no, it matters a lot that we always do this. And another elf who says, I've done it 1,000 times. I'm not going to do it once more, you know, and have to get them back into the spirit of that would be kind of fun to do, I think.
That would be fun. I like that idea a lot. Also, what you just said, because you just said elf, obviously in the fantasy setting, but we're talking about Christmas things. I think it'd be really interesting if you introduced like a Santa's elf, like a little tiny kind of thing that you imagine, to like a D&D elf, like a tall, elegant person, and be like, you are both elves, deal with that.
Totally.
And like, whoa, what? We're both elves? Like, I don't get it.
I feel like the D&D elf would be like, y'all gotta rise up. You gotta stop working for this clown who just has you making toys, breaking your little fingers on the wooden blocks every single day all year round.
Well, Santa would be like a wizard, wouldn't he?
Santa would, well, we
he's
talked
a tinkerer.
We talked about this, that he's an artificer monk.
Right. Oh, that's right.
The Monsters and Multiclass episode.
Yeah.
But he's dedicated himself entirely, wholly to one specific discipline, which is giving toys to children. And he tinkers and he makes things. I think
Very
he's an
cool.
artificer monk for sure. But
yeah.
A wizard would also be an interesting Santa. He could also be technically a druid because he has animal companions, or actually ranger makes the most sense because he travels a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a bunch of deer that he can kind of talk to, I guess.
Epic sleigh.
And he has ways of traveling more effectively. Yeah.
Or like one of my favorite episodes from last year, he's a cool cowboy driving a stagecoach.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's fun to just justify all the silly different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, We've kind of talked about this a couple times before, but I would love to do a few episodes where we just take existing characters mm-hmm. and try to do like 5 different builds around that character. Say, what is this? How do we justify this character being a paladin? How do we justify this character being a rogue? How do we justify, you know, like if we took Batman, for example, on a good day, Batman is a paladin. On a bad day, he is maybe kind of a rogue or a fallen paladin, a blackguard or something like that. And if it's just kind of like a, you know, a regular old knight, maybe he's just a fighter. He just likes to beat people up.
Makes sense.
I think that's a fun concept to explore. So
definitely.
Oh, we're getting so off on these.
Wait, I have one more brainstorm for you since we're on this roll already for a potential episode that we could do as well. We could take classic, like, icons of the holiday season. So we have to make a fantasy party that involves a Santa, a snowman, a reindeer, a gingerbread person.
Oh, I love this.
Exactly. Someone
Throw
made
Krampus
of candy canes.
There, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, here's your party. It's all these random things. How does a snowman and a reindeer and a Santa all work together?
I like this a lot. If you think any of these sound interesting, listeners, let us know. We'd be happy to. Maybe we'll put up a poll on Twitter or something.
That'd be cool.
If there's any of these in particular that you'd like to hear, we can make sure to do them. But we've got enough, we can do them all. Why not?
Yeah.
We do have at least one very special Christmas episode planned coming up. That'll be next week's episode, or maybe the week after. I'm not sure, depending on what the schedule is when we record. But I have a very fun guest episode here coming up, talking about a very classically D&D appropriate topic. So tune in for that very soon. But for now, I think it's a good time for us to just go ahead and jump in.
Yeah.
So we've got this whole assortment of ornaments in front of us, Piper. Mm-hmm. And I think what I want to do is maybe I'll close my eyes
okay. And
let you pick one. I guess there's no reason for me to close my eyes.
You don't
I'm
have
just
going to
point at it.
I'm going to surprise you. I know exactly which one I want to give to you first.
Okay. So you're going to pick an ornament.
Yep.
And then I'm going to describe it to our dear listeners at home who cannot see. And then
exactly.
we will, of course, like I said, post pictures on Twitter so you can see the kind of the complete progression of these characters. But yeah, just give me a character and I'll start. Give me an ornament and I'll start building here.
Wonderful. Okay. I have to make sure that you have this one because it's one of my faves. This All is right. your very first ornament. Please describe what you have in your little paw.
Yeah, so what I have in my hand here is a little paper cone with two little grabbers and some wings, and then taped to the top of this cone is the beautiful face of a very dear friend of mine named Miles, who was Miles and I go way, way back. And we always kind of joked that he was kind of the perfect being. He's one of those guys that is like really annoyingly good at everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have, you know, been interested in a hobby for a year and I feel like I'm like, oh yeah, I'm pretty good at this. And he goes, oh, that sounds interesting. Let me try it. And then he's better than you like the next day.
Right.
You hate him, but you kind of love him too. So,
he's a very pure person.
Yeah, he's very pure. And, we thought what better to, use as the angel on our Christmas tree than a little angel that I fashioned out of him. Yeah, taped on top of this body is a little cutout of him, kind of giving us a little smirk. He's just standing there holding out his arms outstretched.
It's like ready for an itty bitty hug.
Yeah. So, I guess what I am getting from this is I do want someone who, I'm going to make a character out of this.
Cool.
I want someone who kind of seeks perfection. I think someone who maybe they are like half celestial, like an angelic character or something like that. And maybe they've come down into our world because they see humans as imperfect and they want to help enlighten people. They want to go out and educate and teach or something like that. That would be kind of a cool thing, that they have all of these sort of ascended celestial skills that they say, like, you know, Prometheus, I want to give fire to humanity and help them to be better. So they have all these kind of magical tricks and talents and things like that that they're going to use to help spread this knowledge around the world. And what
cool.
happens to the world as a result of that? Who knows? Maybe we'll learn about that a little bit.
I was wondering if, because I knew I wanted to give you that one, and I was wondering if you were going to actually make like an angel character. Because instantly my mind goes to, help me remember, who is my fallen angel that I made?
Oh, Sariel.
Sariel, yes.
Yeah.
I made a fallen angel character, and I just, I would love to bring him back because he was like 7 feet tall. He had these enormous wings that he had to hide under a cloak. He had no face, so he wore like the stone mask.
Yeah.
I loved him.
I loved how spooky and beautiful Sariel was. I think
you.
That was really cool that Sariel literally just took the face from a marble statue and put, you know, use it as his own.
Yeah.
I thought that was neat. And I'm really sad that campaign got sort of abandoned a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But they're characters that we still have. I mean, your character Sariel and my character Saeed from that campaign,
I think
are two of our favorite characters.
We're so passionate about them.
Yeah.
We should definitely bring them back.
That's true. Maybe we can do something on World Forge with those characters, I think.
That'd be great.
Cool.
So I guess I'm curious. You mentioned that your character that you're making is like a half celestial.
No, I think I want to just go fully
angel.
Great. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I want you to describe kind of what you think your character looks like.
So I do really like the kind of Old Testament spooky angel where they're, you know, just a chair covered in eyes and spinning wheels of fire and, you know, or they're kind of faceless and unknowable and unseeable and horrifying. Be not afraid, mortals, you know, that kind of thing.
Everyone's pissing themselves.
But yes, exactly. I love that idea that the reason angels are constantly saying be not afraid is because when you rock up looking like that.
Yes.
Are gonna be afraid. You're gonna startle somebody on the best day of their lives, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's funny. But I think I wanna go with the more traditional sort of Asimir or like celestial D&D character. So a very fair, just kind of the most beautiful version of a human that you could kind of see. But I think they should be like Amazonian, right?
Cool.
Like they're larger than a normal person would be, not like a giant, not in a way that you would say, oh, no human could ever be that hot, that tall, but it's weird to see someone that large. It would be supremely uncommon. You know, they'd be like you know, 7 feet tall, 6.5, 7 feet tall, and just, you know, kind of muscle bound, carved out of stone, basically. And
they have
these beautiful glowing wings. I think there should be like tricks of the light are always kind of happening around them.
Nice.
They give off some kind of a magical glow, but they try to hide it, and they hide it kind of imperfectly because they're still getting the hang of living in the mortal world, right? So around them, there'll always be kind of little rainbows or glimmers or, you know, little rings of light kind of come off of their, when they point at something, a little ring of light kind of spirals off of their hand, things like that.
Very cool.
So there's always these strange things that are happening around them, and people just sort of assume that it's this magical, you know, there's a lot of magic in the world. A lot of people have magic, but nobody's ever really seen this. It's an unfamiliar kind of magic.
And you mentioned the wings. Is this someone who wears their wings proudly, or are they like my character and they try to hide them?
I feel like they can make their wings appear and disappear at
will. So they can be like invisible.
Yeah. I think that's something that they can do. I think their wings are always there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they can shape change necessarily, but I think they can just make their wings disappear.
Okay. That's really interesting because I love the idea. Let's say, for example, like your character is sitting down and their wings are invisible, but you said they're still there and someone is with them and they're like, hey, buddy, and they go to slap him on the back, but their hand like hits this space like a foot away from their back and it feels feathery. They're like, whoa.
Totally.
Like, it'd be so weird, right?
That would be super weird.
Or like, what if you went to hug them and you'd feel that thing there?
I think that would just contribute to sort of the strange live mythology that's evolving around this character. It actually makes me think of in the anime Wolf's Rain, which is, it's kind of a strange anime, but it's about a post-apocalyptic world where humans are largely wiped out. They live in this kind of like tundra wasteland, and they blame a lot of their problems on wolves. I don't remember the specifics of why, but wolves are kind of this magical mythological race, and they wiped out a lot of the wolves, and the ones who survived did so by putting this magical glamoring on themselves so that they appear as humans, but they are still always wolves. And whenever they have to interact with people, like whenever they get in fights, it's really cool the way the animation will cut between, you know, they look like just a guy with a knife or something, but for a split second, you'll see a wolf biting someone's arm or something. And I think that's a really, really neat way of justifying that even though they look like humans and they can talk to humans and they can, you know, go and do human-like things, they actually are just wolves the whole time.
Very cool.
Which is really neat. So that's, I think, an interesting thing that might cause some potential problems with this character, is their ability to blend in visually, but not necessarily like physically all the time. And that they're just huge.
Yeah. So another thing I want to ask you about, and I'm going to give sort of a example of something as I ask about this, but there is a webcomic that I really love. It's one of my favorites. It's on Webtoon.
Yeah.
And it's called it's called Devil Number 4.
Okay.
But it deals with a human character that interacts with angels and devils, and eventually God comes into the picture and all this other stuff. But in that, angels are technically asexual. They can decide based on who they're interacting with if they want to appear as male or female.
Like in Dogma, right?
Right, yeah. And so it's this idea, I kind of like the idea that the comic explores some angels, they have no one identity. They just jump between these different things. But there are certain angel characters who have decided, I actually identify as a woman and I'm going to live that way now, and things like that. And so I wonder, do you have a gender in mind for your person, or do you think they will also sort of be this kind of asexual being?
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's based on a real person that I know who is a man.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my first thought there, but I do sort of like that idea that there is this fluidity and this kind of otherworldliness there. They're more Tilda Swinton than Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of a cool angle to go for. I think their most comfortable form would be, just again, because I'm basing this on a real person.
Right.
Would be the form of a human man.
The form of Miles.
Yes, the form of Miles. But they can't necessarily fully change their shape. Maybe they can modify their face slightly so they can look, you know, they can grow a beard very quickly or lose a beard very quickly, or they can suddenly have more feminine features, or they can have more kind of harsher, you know, more jagged features like that. I think that would be kind of an interesting trait.
Cool.
And maybe the longer they spend in this world, the more, maybe there is something magical about the mortal world that gives them that ability. Maybe that wasn't something they had as an angel. It's something they're developing in this world. And the longer they spend here, the better they get at shape changing.
That's interesting, because my mind would instantly go to the reverse of that, is that when they were this more ethereal thing and they could change fluidly, the more time they spend in the mortal world, the more solid they become and stuck in one form.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of where my mind goes. So it's interesting that you take that other approach.
I do think that's an interesting angle. What I kind of imagine is maybe that there is sort of like heavenly laws that prevent them from changing shape all the time.
Okay.
So when they're in heaven, some of their magic is sort of repressed. Mm-hmm. And now that they're outside of this celestial realm, they have freedom to use magics that they previously had kind of locked away.
Interesting.
So I think that would be kind of a neat thing. And maybe if they do spend too long in one form, they would eventually permanently take on that form. But if they're constantly changing and growing and evolving, they're kind of honing that ability. So that would be a fun thing, that they're now suddenly thinking that they're going to be teaching humankind all of this, you know, this sage lore. And as soon as they get to the mortal realm, they realize maybe there's things I didn't really fully understand either. There's other abilities that I can develop further, and there's ways that I can learn and grow as an individual. That's really, really neat.
Yeah. So before we switch over to me, I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
So you talked about this idea that there are heavenly laws. Do you view your character as being somewhat of a like outlaw from heaven? Like they've come down here and they're kind of under the radar, or did they have an angel permit and they came down to do what they want to do, but then they didn't renew their green card and now they're just roaming the earth?
Well, you know, Miles is a very
he's a very law-abiding
kind of guy, so I would think that this angel would have filled out all the appropriate paperwork here to get their travel visa into the mortal realm. So that's what I'm seeing as something that it's sort of like a sabbatical that they're kind of going on, maybe. They're taking a little vacation from heavenly experience, right? And now they're just kind of slumming it in the mortal realm.
Cool.
You know, I'm thinking maybe I'll go and do some kind of missionary work for the humans down here. Like I can go help build some houses and help these poor impoverished humans in the mortal realm.
Sweet.
That's what I'm imagining.
All right. Well, I think that's a really good first start for your guy.
Great. Well, I actually do have a question for you really quick here.
Okay.
Do we want to keep building on one character and the story that evolves around them? Or do we want to have two characters that are kind of interacting and intertwined? I mean, this might be interesting to just say, now you get to come up with a conflict that this character runs into based on something, or were you?
I was
did you
thinking,
kind of have your heart set on a character yourself?
I was thinking individual plot lines, but that's normally where I
okay.
lean towards. So
let's do that then.
Cool.
So what I want to give you here really quick is actually a new ornament that I'm going to hand you that we just picked up today, and I feel like I'm a little jazzed about this one, just having it, but also I'm very curious what you are going to do with this. So Piper, do you want to describe what I just handed you here?
Gladly. So Sam has handed me a golden triceratops.
Yes.
It's a little dinosaur. It's hanging on a golden thread.
Yeah.
It's my favorite dinosaur, a triceratops.
A three horn,
exactly, from my Land Before Time days. And what I think is really funny about this triceratops is I don't think he's very scientifically accurate, because he has very sharp teeth. His teeth are very pointy. It looks like he's ready to just like tear through some flesh.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. I think I want to kind of use that as part of my inspiration for my character here.
Cannibal Triceratops.
There's something about him being covered in gold. You know what we were talking about recently, the idea that we could do an episode all about this, but I'm going to take this idea and use it now. I think this dinosaur, this creature, let's call him a lesser land dragon.
Yes. Okay.
to continue my world building.
Stealing from your own previous world here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is a lesser land dragon. And I think he was created by a gold mage. There is a gold mage who is currently trying to give life to his creations. He already has the ability to shape gold into whatever he wants, but he wants to put life into it as well. And so I think he was working in his studio one day, and the studio was filled with golden sculptures. And I bet he had a sculpture on his table that looked more like a person. Let's say this gold mage is a dwarf.
Yeah.
And I think he made a dwarf. Maybe it's a son. Maybe he lost his son in a war.
It's Pinocchio style.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Whenever this dinosaur tells a lie, do their three horns grow longer?
No. But that would be funny. No, but so he has this golden sun that he's got on his table, and he's putting all of his magic into it. But his assistant, I think, opens the door and disrupts him. And his, like, the energy that he was channeling between his hands, instead of shooting down into the sun that he's built, it shoots off into his studio.
His assistant opens the window, and a breeze blows all the magic into his stuffed dinosaur that he made.
He's like, Master, urgent message from the king. And he's like, ah, and he like loses his concentration, and the energy zaps off into the studio.
Yeah, okay.
And he's like, you fool, you've just disrupted me. What do you want?
That's like, okay, we've talked before about how like wizardly magic is, it's like a loaded gun, right?
Yeah.
Imagine being the kind of person that you have such poor like trigger discipline with this superpower that you have, that if anybody just walks into the room while you're doing, you go, ah, bang, and just fire a gun while... You know what I mean?
Right?
Like,
exactly.
Like, this to me is a wizard very that does dangerous. Not have control over their abilities.
No, I think he kept putting a sign on the door that said, do not disturb, magic in progress, but he had really bad tape and it kept falling off.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So anyway, he looks around, he can't see what has come alive, and he's like, I guess it didn't hit anything. I'll go see what this king wants. And so he goes off, and then this rather large golden triceratops, it blinks its little gold eyeballs. Ooh. And kind of looks around, and it gnashes its terrible teeth. And
he's like, why do I have these?
And then he kind of slinks out the back. And so I think golden triceratops makes his way out of the studio. And he's really heavy, obviously, because he's made of solid gold.
Yeah.
So I think one of the first things he does is he looks for a little pile of mud. By the way, I'm acting this all out of the table.
Yeah,
listeners,
I'm getting a really nice little visual here, a little triceratops dance.
Yeah. So I think he finds a pile of mud, and he's smart, and he rolls around in it, and he covers himself up in mud. And he goes and he finds like some leaves and some grass, and he rolls around in that. And so he's covered in kind of more this organic stuff.
So he looks like he's made of earth or dirt, or maybe he says, this looks like hair. All these humans are covered in weird hair all the time.
Yeah.
If I get muddy and grassy, then it'll look like hair too. I'll blend in.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so now he's like, all right, now I'm not standing out so much. I'm going to go hide in the woods. And he runs off and he goes over to the woods. And I think he just kind of chills there for a bit. And that's where I am in the story.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So here are my first thoughts about this, right? One, he or she seems mm-hmm. to be sort of hiding from someone, something, right? Either it's the wizard or it's society on the whole. Was there some experience that this triceratops had as they were leaving that made them fear humankind, or something that they saw people using gold as currency and they thought, oh no, I gotta hide away. That's me, you know? I don't want them to chip little flakes of me off. Was there something like that informed this kind of fear?
You know, I was thinking about that too. And I think because this gold mage was smart, he didn't want to simply put life into a statue that looks like his son.
Yeah.
I think he created some kind of potion that maybe had some of his like son's hair or something like that. And so there's an essence of his son.
Okay.
His son's soul is kind of in this now large dragon, but he doesn't really remember his past life because the spell didn't go quite right.
Now there's a quest for us right away.
Well, yeah. So exactly. So I think that's why he knows to hide himself, because as soon as he comes alive, he sees a mirror, a reflective surface, and he looks at himself and he's like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
I think people are not going to like me if they see me like this, so I should hide that I'm made of gold. And so that's why he disguises himself.
How terrifying of an experience to have that. The knowledge that something is not quite right, but not knowing what it is or why.
Yeah.
Right? All you have is the shadow of this memory. You know that you should be worried, but you don't know what about.
Right.
Or why.
Yeah.
That's really scary, actually.
Yeah, it's intense. It's an intense way to start your life.
Cool.
Whenever I make like sentient kind of animal or monster characters like this, I always want them to be a party member.
Yeah, okay.
So I feel as if the way I want this character story to go is that he, for whatever reason, he's like, I don't want to go back there where I came from. I'm just going to keep going forward.
Yeah.
And I think he somehow meets up with other individuals and kind of decides, I'll go with you guys. Maybe he hears people in trouble and he comes running in and he like thrashes some bad guys off of these defenseless travelers.
Yeah, okay.
And they're like, wow, this giant dragon just saved us.
Solid gold lesser land dragon.
Well, he's not gold, he's in disguise, remember?
Oh yes, of course.
Yes.
Of course.
I think that'll be a big like twist and reveal, is that like maybe it'll rain or something, or somehow be revealed that he's made of gold.
Or in the battle a piece of the mud chips off or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And that will change his party's perception of him.
Yeah.
So that's I think where I'm starting.
Well, that was going to be my next question for you was, who was the first individual that, or group of individuals that this lesser land dragon meets, right? And you kind of answered that. I like the idea that they end up just sort of roaming around with this group of adventurers or merchants or travelers or something like that. So maybe we can flesh them out a little bit more.
I like the idea that he meets a group of three women that are traveling together, and I think they're sisters.
Cool. One for each horn.
You know what? Maybe after their journey, they decide that they're going to their group or their family sigil is going to become a triceratops, one horn for each sister.
Oh my god, cool.
Yeah, it'll symbolize them.
A horn for each sister.
Yeah.
That's really cool, actually. I think that it's like a trident, right?
Yeah.
They can say it's always a three-pronged attack. When the three sisters are together, they're unstoppable.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's neat.
I think in classic kind of form, I think the oldest sister is probably, you know, she's very serious and she feels responsible for her siblings. So she's rather like, you know, straightforward business all the time. The young one probably, I'm just going to go really basic with these.
Go for it. I feel like we can build on them.
We can make them more interesting later. The youngest sister, I think she's way more kind of carefree and she has this big imagination and this big heart. And I think the middle sister probably is all about kind of keeping the family together whenever, you know, the two opposite personalities get too intense. And so all three of them together, I think the one last piece that they were missing to kind of unite them on this journey that they have to go on is this character, this sentient mud dragon that they meet, who later they will find out is made of solid gold.
This is the sign that we were waiting for from the heavens. Yeah. Of course.
But that's the thing. I think they set out on whatever quest they're going on saying, you know, we can do this. We can handle the big wide world all by ourselves. And then they get into a scrap and it almost like kills them. And then this big dragon comes in and saves them. And they're like, cool. Now with our buddy dragon at our side, we can take on anything. And they head off on their journey.
I like it a lot. And I also think it would be cool to sort of see that, well, one, knowing that this character, this dragon, is not actually a dragon, it's a human or an elf or a dwarf or whatever trapped
it's
in this body.
The soul of a dwarf.
Yeah, the son of this. I think that's really interesting that they kind of take them in because they think they're this sort of fearsome, you know, monster or dragon or whatever that can kind of help them.
Yeah.
But secretly, it's this person like them that's kind of scared and lost in the world and maybe a little bit helpless. And they kind of are, maybe they don't appreciate that they're helping each other, you know, just as they feel this Triceratops is kind of making them stronger. Triceratops is also kind of getting strength from them, from their support and their companionship. I also really like the idea that maybe they were just sort of fledgling fighters, right? Like they weren't, maybe they weren't even level one characters yet. They were just kind of peasants and they're sort of saying, we're trying to find our way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they see this Triceratops come and fight, it inspires them and they kind of develop their fighting style around that. So they start wielding tridents, or maybe it starts out, they each one of them have a spear.
And then they
combine those three into one weapon and they're like, oh, the trident is the ultimate weapon that we can use. It's a spear that we can use to catch swords and disarm people and things like that.
Very cool. No, I like that development.
Cool.
I think when I'm picturing his size, I think picture a little smaller than like Appa, for example.
Oh, okay.
Like I like the idea that all three of them can ride on his back.
That's cool.
But I don't want him to be like super, super massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How terrifying. Three sisters just riding and stabbing off the top of a triceratops. That's really cool. A solid gold triceratops.
I think maybe later in their journey, once they, you know, his true, I don't know, metal is tested, and they find out that he's made of gold, then later, and they make a name for themselves, maybe he can just be a gold triceratops proudly and not have to hide what's underneath.
Okay, well, I really like where this is at right now, and I think at this point, we want to be starting to introduce some modifiers with some additional ornaments here. And I have kind of a cool one that I'm really interested to see what you do with. So let's just continue with your story here. And I want you to take this ornament right here.
This one?
Yes, that
one. Okay.
So describe once again for our listeners what this ornament is that you're holding in your hand and how you think it could be incorporated into this story.
Very cool. Okay. So what I'm holding is it's an like an orb, essentially.
Yes.
And this is a blown glass ornament that Sam was gifted when he was working in insurance and helped a gentleman on the phone. And the guy was so grateful that he asked for his address and sent him a hand-blown glass ornament in the mail to say, thank you for helping me save money.
I am kind of a hero, I know. it's pretty cool. Yeah, he actually didn't ask for my address. This is totally a surprise. He just sent it to my office.
Aw.
He just sent it to my office address to me. And it was such a delight because this was someone that they called for a quote. I was in property casualty insurance for a couple of years. And I got a call from out of state, and it was a state that we didn't typically do a lot of business in. So I wasn't really thinking this really anything was going to come from this call, but I ended up on the phone with this guy for like 3 hours, and he was just delightful. He had this really interesting sort of wisdom, and I really enjoyed talking to him. And he mentioned that he was into glass blowing, and he said at the end of the call, you know, I just thought that was interesting, and I had been questioning him about it. And he said at the end of the call, he said, you know what? Like, I haven't really thought about this hobby in a long time, and I want to maybe pick this up again. I'm going to start doing that. And he like thanked me for kind of prompting that, which I thought was, I did nothing to prompt that. I just like asked him about it. And then a few weeks later, I got this package in the mail with a little note that said, hey, thanks for the conversation. You know, I'm sorry the policy didn't work out, but it was a delight talking to you. And I just, what an incredible
so nice.
Thing to do for a person. I thought that was so cool. So never doubt your ability to totally make someone's day with an innocuous little act like that. That really like made my like week, my month, honestly. That was such a cool, sweet thing. So
it's very nice. Yeah.
And it's a beautiful ornament. It's this blue ornament with kind of like white waves in it a little bit. It's very cool.
It kind of looks like white paint was drizzled on top and then kind of smeared around. And so it has this, it looks almost like milk is kind of pouring down around this blue glass.
But it's not paint. It's all solid glass.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, it's really pretty. Okay, so I was thinking about kind of the shape and everything, and I had a few ideas, but the one that I'm landing on that I like the idea of, and I'm going to get to it by kind of setting the scene and telling a little tale of how I think this is going to enter their story. So I think after this party has traveled together for a little bit and they are now at least level 3 or 4, maybe they've grown and they all know how to work together and they've accepted one another as their family.
They've killed a couple of rats in old ladies' basements. They've gained a few levels.
Exactly. So I think at one point they are in, let's say, they've come to this city and they're in this market and they're overhearing people talking about stuff, and they're like, we should, you know, see if anyone's petitioning for services so we can get some money and go and do something because we're pretty good at like at fighting now and stuff. Like, I think they're all confident.
We've each got this cool spear, this golden tipped spear, you know?
Exactly.
Do they know that Triceribro is made of gold now?
I don't think so. This point? Okay. No, they don't know that yet. And so they overhear somebody. He's like, hey, I need assistance. Does anybody have any familiarity with how to deal with dragons? Because I like setting things in worlds where dragons aren't very common.
Yeah.
And maybe they're like long forgotten things, but they still exist sometimes.
Yeah. People tell stories about them, but nobody's really ever seen them. Like, people are aware.
Right.
Certainly.
But exactly.
No one really expects to ever actually bump into one in their real life.
Right. And so I think the, I have to amend this a little bit because I feel like they would know, they would see, because we've said that they see him as a lesser land dragon. So they know about lesser dragons, but not high dragons.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Big lizards are normal.
Right.
Yeah. Flightless dragons. Maybe are pretty common.
Exactly.
Great winged Smaug-esque dragons.
Right. Someone
common.
Is inquiring about that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And the girls overhear this and they say, oh, our friend is a dragon. He might be able to help. And he's like, yeah. And so they go over, they're like, what's the problem, friend? And he's like, well, you see, I found this egg in my farmer's field.
Ooh,
and I don't know what to do with it. I think it's a dragon's egg. Can you come and look at it? And they're like, sure. And they're like, you know what to do about this, don't you, Triceratops? And he's like, sure.
Sit on it? I don't know.
So they go out to investigate, and I think this is what they find, is this enormous orb, this blue, I think it does look like it's made of glass, but when you go and you feel it, you can tell that it's like really thick and it'd be hard to break.
Probably it's hot.
Yeah, I think it is giving off this heat. Even though it is blue and white, I would kind of feel like this would give birth to like an ice dragon or a water dragon.
Cool. So it's cold to the touch, maybe.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. And it's that, maybe that kind of thing where it's so cold that it kind of burns.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So they bring you out to their farmer's field where there's kind of this like excavation set up and there's just this giant thing there. And I think it's pretty big compared to our lesser land dragon friend.
Yeah, he's like, I wouldn't want to pass that.
Exactly, because like this is how they know it's like a high dragon, one of the ancient ones, and they're like, what do we do about it? And I think that's how this kind of little journey would start. I think some people would be afraid of the egg and say, well, we have to smash it. We can't let this dragon be born because that will only lead to trouble. Dragons have always been evil things. I think there's kind of like this leftover stigma about that. And some people are saying, no, we should like preserve it and maybe if we raise the dragon when it's born, then like it'll be our friend, just like Timon and Pumbaa with Simba or something like that. So I think they are now kind of in this this situation, and maybe it's decided. Because I feel like we've had conversations like this before in the show where it's about debating things. So maybe the debate isn't the quest. Maybe it's more like it's decided that there is, let's just say for the sake, because we're in a fantasy setting, there's a ice volcano nearby. And it's decided that what should be done is that the egg should be taken to the ice volcano.
And thrown into the volcano?
Yeah, and put there, like with its kind. And so this group is the one who volunteers, like, we'll take the egg. We've got a dragon here, and he's our steward. So when we arrive, the dragons won't kill us right away because we have a dragon on our side who can kind of...
Yeah, an ambassador to the dragons,
And that's when, you know, on the journey, I think that's when he reveals, he's like, okay, I'm actually wasn't born a dragon.
Yeah.
I'm a dwarf. I don't remember my past. I woke up in this body. I don't know anything about dragons, guys.
I'm also made of a very soft metal. Please don't get me too close to the heat. It'll be very bad for me.
Lots of confessions are made, and they learn a lot about each other.
I like this because they're put in a situation where they have to be a dragon, and they're just... I have no context for what it's like to actually be a dragon. Like that isn't really a thing that they have memories of. That would be really cool. And do they say, well, we're already on this quest, you got to fake it till you make it?
Exactly.
Or do they say, let's abandon this maybe and do something else?
Right.
I think that there's different venues there that are really interesting.
Yeah. I kind of like the idea that maybe, cause I feel like if a high dragon is born, it's the kind of thing where, like, it's intelligent immediately.
Yeah.
There's not, like, a growing stage of, like, I'm a baby dragon. It's like, no, I'm a full-grown adult instantly as soon as I come out of this egg. So I think maybe...
Well, they'd be at least as smart as an adult human, which is, like, idiotic by dragon standards.
So I think when they arrive at this ice volcano and the dragons are coming down and our dragon in disguise, who can't speak Draconis or whatever it is they speak, and he doesn't know any of the dragon's secret handshakes, and he's failing at all of that, and they're like, you're no dragon.
Like, you didn't whip your tail on the ground when you winked at me during the customary dragon pawing of the earth.
Exactly.
Where did you come from? It's a strange dialect.
Right? So I think when they think that all is lost and they're going to get blasted by ice lightning, I think the egg hatches and this dragon, this baby dragon comes out and he's like, hey, no, they're cool. I was listening to them the entire time I was in my egg because I can hear through the shell. And they're good people.
I've been alive in here for 40 years.
Yeah. He's like, no, I've been doing a lot of thinking and reading and growing. That's why I'm an adult when I come out.
Yeah,
and he's
sure.
like, oh, I was listening to them on the whole journey. They took good care of me. They're good people. Don't ice breath them.
Is inside this egg like the inside of a Pokeball where it's a little it's like a little library and a spa and stuff, so he's just hanging out and he's kind of like, I don't know if I really need to leave here. It's pretty great, honestly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I was thinking he's got a couple of Reader's Digests. Yeah. Yeah. So that's some reading material.
So he can digest all those readers after he eats them.
Exactly.
I actually think, so I want to just throw out an alternative sort of option here. So say the town where they found this, maybe they made a different decision about what should be done with this egg. If instead of going and throwing it into the ice volcano or bringing it up to the ice volcano to say, you know, put it back with its people, if they said, well, you know, some of the stories say the dragons like to murder people and it's probably bad for us if a bunch of dragons show up. You know, we live in a pretty balmy environment and that's good for raising our, you know, our crops and things like that. If suddenly an ice dragon is living around, what's going to happen? Is it suddenly going to get colder? Are we going to turn into like a tundra or something? Our livelihoods are going to change. So a lot of people would probably think this is a bad idea to let this dragon be born, but they would know dragons' eggs are too magically attuned. They're too powerful. They're too durable. We can't really destroy one through the means that we have available. But we also know that for a dragon's egg to hatch, it has to be attuned with the element that it is, you know, tied to. So for an ice dragon's egg to hatch, it has to be very, very cold. So if you light a fire under it, it will just never hatch. It won't destroy the egg. It won't harm the dragon or anything like
that. Just keep it in stasis.
Exactly. So maybe this could be kind of an interesting thing that it becomes this artifact in this town that it's like a statue at the center of town. And there's a beacon underneath this egg that always has to be lit, you know? And so as long as that beacon is lit, everyone knows that they're safe. And it starts to kind of become this really, this almost maybe cult-like sort of thing where everyone kind of worships this egg because it keeps them safe. People are worried. The dragon could come out at any time. People from outside don't really understand. So maybe nobody messes with them. And that could be an interesting, you know, an interesting sort of conflict the party could face. Maybe you're staying in this town and then suddenly the beacon goes out. Somebody snuck in and they doused the flames, or like a group of teenagers vandalized it or something like that.
Someone spray painted all over the egg.
Totally. You know, and then what happens here? Do we say, oh, shit, this egg is going to hatch. Do we evacuate the town?
Right.
Do we try to, you know, prepare ourselves to fight this dragon? Do we try to prepare ourselves to parlay with this dragon? Mm-hmm. What would be the course of events?
Yeah. And
I think this could play out very similarly with this group still having a dragon on their side saying, oh, no, it's okay that your fire went out. We got a dragon who can maybe talk some sense into this, you know, into this little baby when it hatches. Yeah.
And then he would have to be like, guys, guess what?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a dwarf.
Exactly. I think that sort of confessional would play out very similarly either way. And I think these are two very interesting scenarios that we could have. I was talking with somebody on our Discord here recently about they were not sure how their party was going to react to something in the game they were running. And they were just sort of saying, I'm just kind of worried. I don't really know how to kind of write for this. And I was saying how whenever I write a big story moment like this, I try to think of at least 3 degrees of completion, right? So kind of the simple option is there's success, there's failure, and there's compromise, right? So what do you do? One, just assume your party's going to take the bait for this quest, right? They're going to go and fight the big bad, or they're going to say, yeah, sure, we want to earn money by escorting this caravan, or we want, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the outcomes of that can either be, yes, you win the fight and the bad guy goes away. No, you lose the fight and maybe some of your party is, you know, captured or killed, or compromise, it's somewhere in the middle, yeah, right? And I think those are valuable sort of things to consider when you're writing these stories, is at least give yourself a few options so that even if you don't write out a long form kind of conclusion for that or have a really strong expectation of what's going to happen next, you've got that in your mind and you're prepared for things to go pear-shaped.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always be prepared.
Absolutely. Yes. I think that is probably a really valuable exercise. So,
no, totally.
Yeah, I don't know. That's something that I would recommend for our listeners to try and do.
I like that we have a couple options of what to do with this egg.
Yeah.
I also have to say, because we were talking a lot about eggs, weirdly, on our drive back from the Christmas tree farm.
We were, yeah.
And I like the idea that if we go with what you have described, where this egg has kind of become the mascot of this town, I think they would rename the town Eggtown.
Eggtown. Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, I think both of these would be interesting. So
yeah.
I'm happy to, I mean, you know, give this over to our listeners. I mean, do you feel there's anything else that you'd want to build onto on either of these scenarios, or should we maybe?
I think I'm ready to give you your next prompt.
All right. Well, lay it on me here.
Alrighty, Sam. So here is your next ornament.
Ooh, okay. This is a really cool one. All right. I like this ornament a lot. I can't have the price tag on it still.
How much does it cost?
It was $9.95.
That's expensive.
Well, you know, it's a beautiful ornament, right? So what this ornament is it's a little slicing of a tree. It's a little wooden disc with live edge on it. It looks like some kind of birch or something, I think, on there. And then painted on it is the beautiful state bird of Minnesota, a loon.
Yay!
So I'm a big sucker for Minnesota-based memorabilia.
Hell yeah.
I'm very proud of being Minnesotan for a lot of reasons. And also, loons are just really cool birds. They're spooky.
Awesome.
They're sort of like the ghosts of the lake. I love it. I love that you can see, one, they make horrifying sounds.
They make beautiful sounds.
Well, they're beautiful and scary and spooky. But yeah, they're very beautiful. They have piercing red eyes, which is really cool. And also, if you see a loon in the lake, they can dive underwater and they'll be underwater for like 5 minutes and then they'll just appear a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. They teleport around. It's very, very cool.
Or like when I was in the Boundary Waters one time and we saw a pair of loons at the other end of the lake and they dove down because they had some babies, and then the dad popped up by our canoe and flapped at us to be like, get out of here. And we're like, we're leaving.
Loons are very cool. So what I'm kind of taking from this is I like the idea of the ability that loons have to almost sort of teleport around. It's almost like a supernatural magical kind of ability, right?
Cool.
And I think that would be something that maybe my angel character here, Miles, encounters an animal, like either a loon or an animal similar. I mean, let's just use a loon as our stand-in here. And this is something that they basically didn't know about. Heaven didn't have knowledge of these beasts. Maybe this is an animal that that was not created through divine mastery of the world. It was something that just sprang up on its own, right?
Evolution.
Yeah, exactly. So it evolved from some previous thing, and it's gained this supernatural magical ability to teleport around, and it's almost angelic on its own. And it's maybe the early stages of almost like a rival sort of thing to these angels. If in a million years from now, this species is allowed to continue to evolve in the way that they have, maybe they'll become powerful enough to challenge the, you know, divine order of things, right? I think that's kind of an exciting thing. So
as
they're traveling around, they suddenly see, oh, they could be a challenger one day. Should I wipe them out now? Should I say, let's nip this in the bud? Or should I try and protect this creature and, you know, maybe ally with them? I think kind of similar to this discussion with the dragon's egg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I feel like the idea of an animal, like, kind of developing a magical ability, it makes me think of, I think it's really cool that from Avatar The Last Airbender, it said that the human airbenders, or the human benders, learned to do it from the animals.
From animals, yeah.
Which is really cool. Like, the dragons were the first firebenders, and the mole badgers,
badger moles
were the first earthbenders. And I think that's really cool that animals would naturally have kind of an closeness with nature and magic, that it could kind of tap into that.
I agree.
I like that a lot. I feel like if you had the right philosophical minded party, you could really do a very interesting campaign that's essentially creationism versus Darwinism.
No, totally.
Darwinism?
I don't think it's necessarily going to be realistic for us to get into that whole conversation
on this
podcast.
Yes.
So what I want to do is maybe develop some of the context around this and talk about where did this creature kind of come from? Where is it that they sprang up? Why did they become so magically attuned? And so what I think would be a cool thing is maybe there's like a giant crater lake or something. Maybe a meteor struck the Earth thousands of years ago.
Space loons.
Space. Yeah.
Oh, they're aliens. That'd be so cool.
Okay, that's actually really cool. I was going to say maybe something from heaven was like cast out of heaven and crashed into the Earth.
Ooh.
Or some, like, you know, just a meteor that has some kind of magical properties. It created this giant crater. Over time, it filled with water, and then the creatures that inhabited this area became somewhat magically attuned, and it just so happens that this loon is the one that was the most advanced of all of them. It kind of developed the most quickly because it was very adaptable. It can exist in the sky and in the water already, so it was able to go from non-magical to magical very quickly in the same way.
Very cool.
So the loons are sort of the kings and queens of this area here. They rule over this crater, and anything that you do in this crater, all the other animals kind of revere them, sort of. I think that would be kind of a cool thing to explore. I do also like alien loons. That's pretty cool too.
So I feel like, because your angel character is already kind of semi-divine, that they would be able to speak to these loon rulers. But could any person, if they went to the lake and they sought the counsel of the king and queen of the loons, would the loons be able to, like, talk to them?
I think so. I think maybe not all loons can do that, but there are certain loons that are awoken or, you know, more advanced in their ability to harness the magic of this area. I think it would also be something where most loons, when they leave the crater, they lose their magical abilities.
Makes sense.
If they migrate for winter, or if they, you know, just go out for any reason, if somebody captures one and takes them away, they lose their magical powers. But the king and queen loon that rule over this area, they have magic anywhere that they go.
Are they, do you picture them being sort of like a dire loon? Are they really big, or are they normal loon size?
What I'm picturing is sort of like Black Swan style. They're human beings or elves or something that have kind of feathery gowns, and or like the crane wife almost.
So they can transform into birds?
Yes, I think they have like a human form that they kind of exist in primarily, but they can transform into birds. And if they, you know, if they're wounded under a full moon or something, they're trapped in whatever form they're in or something like that.
Imagine a beautiful cloak of like black and white speckled feathers, like a loon has.
Yes, exactly. And they would have piercing red eyes, even as humans in their human form.
And they all have like choker necklaces. Because the loons have those black stripes on their necks.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
I like that a lot. I like them being sort of the guardians of this area. I always like having guardian animals.
Yeah.
If it's in a forest or in a, you know, in any given area, that's always really fun to me. And I like this magical crater lake. And the reason people would come there is because they know there's this magical meteor at the bottom. And so maybe adventurers or thieves or maybe like the king and queen of the human world around this area, they send in emissaries to try and harness or harvest whatever magical ores are at the center. And this creates a conflict with the king and queen of the loons. And so your party is maybe involved in this somehow. Maybe you just happen to be in the area and you hear a fight going down, or you find a bunch of wounded soldiers and they have, you know, loon beak marks all over their bodies or something like that.
Their feathers are littering the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how do you get involved in this? Do you side with the loons or do you side with the humans, or do you try to broker a compromise? I think that's kind of a cool thing. I like this loon king and queen. I really like they have a cloak of feathers. Mm-hmm. They can wrap themselves up in it and they spin around, and in an instant a loon appears and flies away or something like that.
Very cool. Yeah. So how does your Miles Angel come to the lake? How does he interact with these characters?
So I think as he's traveling, he stumbles upon them, and, you know, maybe this is the interesting thing. Maybe he does see them as a threat. He says they're too powerful. They don't really belong in the mortal world. They're kind of existing in this space in between. They've taken this celestial magic unto them, and it's kind of ascended, caused them to ascend, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe this angel character, they say, I have to stop this. And they're the ones that hire the party to go and investigate.
Interesting.
They say, I've found this strange anomaly. Mm-hmm. If I show up, you know, I'm too powerful. I'll cause a big scene if I show up. So they would come to this group of travelers and they would say, go in and speak with the guardians of this crater and report back to me on what they say. Mm-hmm. And that would be sort of the kickoff of this adventure. Is
cool.
Maybe the loons have some sort of expectation that they were sent by some other powerful creature, but they don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. So when you go there, do you speak with the loons and are you beguiled by them? And do you join their side, or do you try to kind of trick them and manipulate them and make them think you're on their side so you can come in and destroy them like the angel wants or something like that?
Yeah.
Or maybe you can teach the angel something.
Right.
Which would
be
poetic.
You can come back and be like, no, these guys are good. Let them be. Yeah.
Exactly. And this isn't something the angel's doing because they're evil. It's something that they're doing because they've always been taught that this is just the natural order, that there is a hierarchy that must be preserved. You can't jump your place in line. So that would be kind of a cool thing, that this angel that comes to Earth to teach humans something ends up being taught something by humans.
I like that a lot. Yeah. One thing, if I may offer a potential cultural element of this loon lake culture,
yes,
is I personally think loon songs are gorgeous, and I think it would be a great honor if you won the trust of the loon king and queen, that they would say, we will invite you to our concert tonight, and you get to listen to them sing their spooky songs.
I like that a lot. That would be like, no mortal ears have ever heard this song and survived or something like that. That would be really cool.
And if there's a bard in the party, maybe they're given like a special like panpipe or flute so you can replicate their song.
That's so cool. So now we have a cool artifact here as well, that whenever they use this instrument, it's like a sound that can drive someone insane because it's this unknowable sound, or it has some kind of strange supernatural ability.
Or it can charm anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on, you know, how you want to use it.
Absolutely.
I like the idea that the king or queen would simply pluck a reed from the water and they would hand it to them and it would instantly like fashion this like perfect little flute.
That would be very, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flute from the loon king.
I like it. And they'd pull, you know, they'd reach back with their long loon neck and pull a feather out of their back or something like that and attach it. Yeah, I don't know. There's so many cool directions with that, I think.
And they'll stick that feather in your hat and they'll call you macaroni.
Exactly.
And they're like, get out of here.
Absolutely.
And you're like, well, that was loony.
Whoa! Stop. Okay.
And stop.
I think these are both cool stories. I like, we've been leaving a lot of our prompts and stories and things like that really open-ended lately. And
we always leave them open-ended.
Yeah, that's kind of my favorite way of doing it. I like that we end up with these stories that people can take and use, and we like getting feedback on how you take them and use them. Mm-hmm. So if you want to reach out and share with us how you take our ideas and build upon them or improve them or fix them or, you know, anything like that, please consider reaching out and sharing with us. And if you want to, you can do so by going to where, Piper?
You can do it on Twitter. We're @WorldForgePod on Twitter. You can also send us emails. to worldforgepod@gmail.com.
Yes, absolutely. We love getting feedback from you guys. We've gotten a lot of really, really cool feedback lately. We've gotten some great emails. We talked about how Dale Ivory sent us that that name generator website. We also, Dale sent us a link to this really cool, like, Tolkien role-playing module that's available for free online. I'll try and post a link to that on the internet, a link to that on Twitter.
On
the interwebs, the World Wide Web. We love hearing from you guys and getting that kind of stuff from you. It is something that, you know, we do read all that stuff. We do see it all and we take it to heart. It just makes our day when we, you know, get actual interaction with you guys. It doesn't sound like doesn't feel like we're just shouting into the void, right? So please continue to do that.
Exactly. The best way that you can support our show is by leaving a review.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want to go to Apple Podcasts or we don't have a Podchaser account just yet, but anywhere that you listen to your podcast,
Spotify,
that allows you to leave a
YouTube
review.
YouTube Music.
I don't think Spotify lets you leave reviews, but anywhere you can, leave us 5 stars and a nice little comment. It does a lot to get our show in front of new listeners, and consider just sharing with a friend. If you want to strap them down and force them to listen to our podcast, like Clockwork Orange style, we're also totally okay with that too. So
trap them in a car, take them hours out of the city to cut down a tree and force them to listen to this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I did to Sam.
Absolutely. Yes. We would love that. So, on that note, I think it's a good time for us maybe to first hop over to the rec room.
Okay, what you got?
The next section of the show. And what I've got for you this week actually is, it's a cool website that was shared with us by a listener, our good friend Alex. That's Alex Bomb, A-E-L-X Bomb on Twitter. They shared with us a website called Bardly.io. And what it is it's basically like a service that allows you to build sort of scenes and playlists from this vast library of fantasy music that you can use to sort of set the tone for your game. So you can say, well, here's my battle playlist and here's my traveling playlist and here's my calm forest music and here's the tavern music. And you can jump between these scenes very, very easily. It's a really, really cool service. You can get a free trial of it on Bardly.io, not Bardly.io.com, just Bardly.io. Go there. You can use their free trial and you can see, you know, exactly what it's all about. And if you want to use it, the full version of it, I think it's a pretty inexpensive price tag on it. So that's our recommendation this week. Thank you, Alex, for sharing that
with
us. Yeah, that's a really, really fun thing. I think having music and sound effects and sort of meta, like intertextual kind of additions to your game can do a lot to add to not even like the realism necessarily, but just the immersion.
Yeah,
I think that's really fun. I love when we're suddenly in a fight and the music picks up like in a, you know, in the way in a video game it would or in a movie or something like that. That's always really, really cool. So we encourage you to go and check that out if you typically don't do that kind of thing for your games. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And speaking of saying thank you to people, we're going to just quick dip our toe into the thank tank.
Yes, please.
And offer a great big thank you to G Wizard. At Twitter, they are at Wizard18. And they were amazing.
Oh my God.
And made four, count them, four maps of the tavern that we created, the Gilded Petal.
Yeah.
One for each season. So that's amazing.
It's so cool. And there's such cool details that differentiate between each season. So like in fall, for example, you can see there's stockpiles of fruits and things like that. And there's, in the winter, there's more wood piled up because they have to use wood to heat the, you know, the building, and it's awesome.
It's
the attention
cool.
to detail is so cool.
Yeah. So you can, Sam recently retweeted it on our Twitter. You can also look up G Wizard and find it probably, but it was awesome. So thank you very much for making that.
That's so exciting cool. when y'all create art and things like that from our creations. That's just the best. So
means a lot.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's about it for this week.
I think that is it for this week. Yeah. We will be back next week with another really cool topic that might be Christmas themed. It might actually be based on, we were talking on Twitter too about doing an episode about gladiators and fighters and boxers because we watched the Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. fight last night and it got us kind of thinking about doing something like that. But that's not really Christmas themed. So I don't know. Maybe we'll find a way to make that holiday themed. Maybe
not
we'll
everything
just do
needs
that
to be
anyway.
Christmas.
Yeah, who knows?
People will jump in and out.
We might be back with that next week. We also might be back with a fun guest episode next week. There's a lot of possibilities. We're not really sure how the schedule is going to shake out just yet, but definitely we encourage you to tune in. And we also want to thank you for making it through another episode and week with us here. You all are the best.
Thanks,
we'll talk
guys.
To you again very soon. Yes, thank you and goodbye.
Bye.